This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 118 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
I leave you to it. Thanks, boys.
So what do you want to know?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I have 10 questions for you.
It's like a quiz.
But they're not multiple choice.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about how to become a toy designer. What classes would I have to, like, focus on in middle, high school, and college?
That's an interesting question, and it kind of depends what route you're going to go when it comes to toy design. There are a couple of different ways that people wind up becoming toy designers. Some folks go through a traditional path where they will study usually industrial design when they get into college. There are a couple of schools, a couple of very expensive art schools here in America. There's one in New York and one in California that have specifically toy design programs. But they are very expensive and they don't turn out nearly enough people to kind of fill the demand for that. So like I said, industrial design lots of times is what you can study when you get into college. That's the way that you do it if you want to work at one of the big toy companies. They also like people who have an experience in illustration. Some folks go to art school for that. That's probably the more traditional way to do it. And then some people, like John and I, do it the really hard way. Just do it on our own. That's a tougher nut to crack. If you want to get in with a bigger company where it's less of a headache, definitely you're looking for, like I said, an industrial design program. But the most important thing, even before you get that far, you need to be drawing. You need to draw every day and just draw. It took me, I don't know, probably 25, 30 years before I got good at drawing. And that's just part of how it is. And you just got to keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. And that's the hard part for a lot of folks is the time, I guess, and the dedication to doing that.
It's easy to give up.
What app should I get and play with now? Like, what should I mess with?
I guess that really kind of depends in the beginning. John, what do you think? Probably pencil and paper to begin with, even before we get to apps. Just lots and lots of drawing on paper.
Even if you're going to do a 3D design, you want to do a lot of pictures of what you want it to look like and get it dialed in. You're going to add stuff and do your own thing later. But, you know, if you're going to just start messing with a 3D program, Blender is free. There's hundreds of tutorials on YouTube. There's even a Blender channel. There's a lot of ways. If you're going to do 3D work, that's a good place to start. But if you're just going to do art fundamentals, you know, when Troy said that about drawing every day, that is exactly true. And then you get to the point where you can use something like Photoshop, you know, Illustrator to do things on, you know, to do things on a computer screen. But I think that drawing on paper is kind of ignored, but I think it's the standard way to get into this. If you're not going to go through all the college and all of that, you have to be able to draw and be able to put on paper what you're imagining, because you'll never get somebody else to buy into what is in your head until you can show them what's in your head. And a lot of times the best way to do that is to draw. You want everybody that plays Pictionary to want you on their team. But Blender, if you're going to do 3D, start with Blender. They've got a lot of courses for beginners. And I mean, you can go online and find a course where you can start with just a blob of clay and turn that into a model.
Okay. What books and stuff should I read that like kind of help me?
So there's a lot of art books out there. So for me, I guess one of the things I have the hardest time with still to this day is drawing people. And drawing people is it's a difficult thing. Because if you draw a person and a part of it doesn't look right, everybody notices immediately, right?
Uh-huh.
Because people are hard to draw. you know, I've owned countless like how to draw comic characters, books and stuff over the years, you know, so practice figure drawing. That's what that's called. That's a big piece for it. I have a background in traditional drafting, and I know we had textbooks at one point. But you know, I was doing a lot of architectural stuff, and I don't know that that really applies to toy design in the long run. But yeah, it's figure drawing's tough. And that's, if you can get that down, you can draw just about anything.
How can I improve my drawing style and stuff?
Like I said, you got to draw every day. And something you might try doing is what I found helpful was sometimes I would try and duplicate somebody else's style, right? I'd try and not trace over the top of, but try and duplicate drawings that other people had done. And one of the things I always find is that as I do that, every time I would draw something new and I'm trying to duplicate and I'm really paying attention to the way somebody did something, is I pick something up every time I do that. I learn a little something every time I do that. And it's a long process. It's not a quick process. It takes, you know, years of practice. That's a good way to pick up some of those techniques.
Find an artist that you like their style and work with that. I know one of my favorite books is, I think it's Drawing Comics the Marvel Way by Stan Lee. That's a great book, and it's got a little bit in there about foreshortening and drawing characters, but it also has a little bit about drawing comics. But I found that to be still one of my favorite books to go back to. And when it comes to drawing figures, the Hogarth, the artist, author, that guy's stuff is always pretty amazing, especially heads and hands, because that's time the thing that slow people down or,
yeah.
But there's a few books on Amazon that I've seen that are pretty great books. If you can get a hold of an anatomy book.
I think you might have one of those.
That's a pretty solid thing, because you learn like where the muscles are, learn what things, how bodies move and all of that. And it's a lot easier to draw something natural that looks natural if you understand how everything moves and works.
Yeah. Are there online like classes or something, since I'm not really old enough for college at all?
You know, there's all kinds of tutorials now on YouTube. And all kinds of tutorials online, you just have to look for them, specifically what you're looking for. But that wasn't a resource we had when I was a kid. And there are lots of drawing tutorials and things on YouTube. And even when you get into software, you know, there's lots of tutorials for the various software programs. A lot of the ZBrush stuff I found has been, you know, online tutorials, usually in video format. And you know, that's great. Anytime that people share their experience and how they're doing things, that's another learning opportunity that you can try and duplicate.
Skillshare online, I think it's about $15 a month, and they have tutorials on how to do everything, but they do have a lot of just standard drawing tutorials and sketching. And I know it's not like what you want to do, but drawing like flowers and still life pictures of just things really helps you understand how sometimes drawing what you see and what you think you see are two different things. That will always trip you up. In your head, you think you know what it looks like. Sometimes you just have to see it.
Yeah.
Skillshare doesn't cost very much. I think for $15, you can download as many as you can in 30 days and just save them. But there's a ton of stuff on YouTube. Just start like how to sketch or how to draw people. Just look for that. You'll find all kinds of things. It's like Troy said, it was a resource we didn't have when we were kids. And I can't imagine what it would be like now, where I was as a kid still drawing kind of stick figures to where I am now. I wish that was available then.
Are there like any artists or designers who like get inspiration for like follow or something?
Well, for toy design, obviously, G.I. Joe was a big thing in my life and in John's life too. And I pull a lot of inspiration, again, from those designers that Carson's working with on Operation Recall. I've spent, I can't tell you how many hours looking at Ron Rudat and Mark Pennington's sculpt sheets that have made their way out into people's collections. And I spent way more time than anyone should looking at those. But, you know, when I was a kid, too, and I was learning to draw, you know, I was looking at a lot of comic books, and Herb Tempe did the early stuff on G.I. Joe, Mike Zeck. When G.I. Joe kind of went away, I was really into X-Men stuff. And Jim Lee had been very popular, so I was kind of looking at his style. J. Scott Campbell was real big then. I was pulling a lot of inspiration from a lot of different places as I was learning to draw. Sometimes you just find somebody whose style you really like. And like I said, you can try duplicating that and see what you can learn.
How much do you draw in, like, a week or something?
Oh, in a good week, I will draw an entire sculpt sheet for an entire character and all of their accessories. If I'm having a good week, and I am left to do what I need to do. The thing is, when you get to be a designer, lots of times you don't get to do that all at once, right? So I'm doing that within a week, but I'm also making graphics and I'm doing deco sheets and I've got day job stuff I got to do. So I would like to draw more, but I try and draw at least 3 or 4 hours a day if I can. But again, I'm in a different position than most folks.
Yeah, I usually probably try to draw an hour, maybe 2 hours a day. And my day job does not allow a lot of time for that. So I'll be in a meeting with my notebook, just sketching whatever, just to keep my brain sharp.
Uh-huh. What kind of materials do you guys use?
You talking like for drawing, or are you talking for toy modeling? What are you talking about?
Like for drawing.
John, you want to answer that since you're still working in paper more?
Yeah, I use a, I wish I had one in this room, but there's a couple of companies make a mechanical pencil, but it uses a thick lead. And you can pick whatever kind of lead you want in there. And then you use a little pencil sharpener to sharpen that lead inside of it. And I think it's my favorite thing. I'll draw, sketch out something in 4-H and then start darkening it in.
All of a sudden, I don't have any here. But what you're talking about is a lead holder, right? Like a 2 millimeter lead holder.
Yeah, Staedtler. You can get them at Hobby Lobby. Staedtler makes them. They're over with the drafting supplies. Because you can put whatever kind of point on it you want with a little sharpener.
I used to have a bunch sitting in here, but I don't have any right at the moment. But yeah, it's like an extra big mechanical pencil, right? And you can buy different hardnesses of lead to go in it. And sometimes people will call them drafting pencils. Back when we used to do drafting on the board, on paper, instead of using software, that was what we used. Once you get past that and you want to try digital, there's a lot of options for digital inputs, different tablets, right? Some people like little tablet computers. And those are nice. I tend to find that they don't have the processing power that I'm looking for. But Wacom makes a whole line of tablets, and some of them are just little tablets that you plug into the computer, and then you can draw on the tablet and watch it on the computer. And then they make some high-end ones like their Cintiq, which is actually a screen that you can draw directly on. And that's what I use when I'm working now, is I've got a Cintiq and I draw directly on the screen.
So kind of like an iPad with like an Apple Pencil or something.
Kind of, except for the Cintiq's just a screen. It's not the computer. You have to have a separate computer to hook up to it. Think of it like a TV you can draw on.
Okay.
Yeah, mine is much bigger. I started in drafting, right? So I was used to sitting at a big drafting board and kind of moving my arm in wide movements to do lines and stuff. So I was used to working in a really big format.
When you guys, like, draw on paper and stuff, do you guys just use pencils and inks and stuff, or do you fully color everything in?
Typically, if I'm doing sketches, I'm just doing black and white. Sometimes I use Copic markers to color stuff in, or Prismacolor pencils, but the thing is, because we need stuff to put on the internet lots of times now, it's easier for me to just get it in black and white, get it into the computer, and then I can color it in the computer, but that's more of a because we're putting it on the internet, we need it in a digital format thing.
Yeah, for me, it's just whatever the job is. You know, sometimes I'm just doing a sketch for myself. I usually don't finish those out with anything but black and white. But if I want to show it to somebody else, like for an idea, I'll use Copic markers and highlight it. Most of the time, I like to just do things in pencil and then use colored pencil to highlight, you know, to give it a pop. I'm usually pretty happy with that. I've done some watercolor. I've done acrylic. I've done all kinds of things, but that's always my favorite thing to do. I would just like to sketch.
Is there anyone who I should like meet or something to help me?
I don't know that there's anybody in particular you need to meet. I mean, I think one of your advantages is you're still young, so you have time to, like we said, work at drawing on a regular basis and really develop those skills. You're not an adult deciding to get into it later in life. So before you worry about meeting anybody, because old farts like us will probably be long gone by the time you're ready to start working. You just want to focus right now on building those core skill sets and building up that ability to illustrate.
Yeah.
Build yourself a portfolio, like 12 to 20 things you like that you've done, and put those in a little booklet or something. And then every time you do something you like better than what you did, replace it. to where at any time you have your best pieces of work all in one place. And then you can later on go back and say, I don't like that. I want to change that. I'm going to put something else there. I did this picture of a car. I did a sketch of a car. I'm going to put that in there. But it gives you a personal barometer of where you are, how you see where you are. And then if you do meet somebody, if you go somewhere and you know you might meet somebody, you've got that little portfolio with you and you can say, hey, can you give me some pointers or, you know, what could I do better? And always be open to criticism. It sucks and it hurts your feelings sometimes, but you're right there looking at it right in front of your face and you don't see things and other people will just look at it and say, man, that hat looks like crap. Oh, okay. I see that now. But be open to criticism because sometimes it's going to hurt. But everything you learn, everything you hear from somebody is going to make you better. But if you start with just 10 to 12 or 10 to 20 of your favorite pieces and just keep improving those pieces, even if it's not the exact same thing, just your best pieces and just keep them together. I think that helps. I mean, that's something I like to do just to remind myself where I need to go, what else I need to get better at.
Yeah.
And then when you get older and you're actually trying to go get a job somewhere, you're going to need a portfolio anyway. So just get used to keeping your favorite things in one place to where you can keep track of them and look at them.
Uh-huh.
And learn from them.
Like have a small like sketchbook or something.
Yeah.
That I have like my favorite pieces of art in.
That's the way to go. Just keep making it better.
Or like a small folder.
Like a 3-ring binder or something. Yeah. With some page protectors.
As you get better, you can go to Hobby Lobby or Michael's and pick you up one that's got sleeves in it built into it. And you can just slide them in the sleeves and change them out when you're ready to.
Congratulations. You have completed the 10 question quiz.
Well, thank you. Right. I hope we gave you good information.
Yeah, I hope that helps.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sitting down with Grindstone Toys, which is Troy McKee and John Kukovich, was incredible. These guys have a huge history as toy collectors, as part of the G.I. Joe community, as toy designers, and their own brand, Grindstone Toys, call sign Longbow, kickstarted earlier this year for over $200,000, and their backer kit is going on right now, as is their pre-order. So if you missed the Kickstarter for whatever reason, jump on the backer kit now. You have until mid-November to pre-order this at reduced prices. If you wait until 2023 to start ordering, it's going to be full retail. I hope you enjoy this conversation. It was a joy to have. I haven't finalized mine yet, but you guys did not say anything at all about a weapon refresh. And so when I built my backer kit and I took a screenshot, I posted the screenshot of my loadout and I was like, don't judge me. And Greg was like, why do you need that many weapon refresh? And I was like, see, that's a judgment question. Why do you not?
Your guys's was the first line, first O-ring product that I haven't like begrudgingly bought. Like I'm actually excited for your guys's stuff. I grew up in the middle years era. I still have my whole middle years collection. I have a handful of A Real American Hero stuff, but my attitude is the same with modern stuff too. Like I really don't need the same things just recarded. With you guys doing what you're doing and having it be more of a, you know where the inspiration's coming from. Your passion is there for Real American Hero Joe, and you're creating a great companion piece that can intertwine but isn't relying on somebody else's ideas.
Exactly. And that's really, you hit the nail on the head there, because that's really how we think of it. It's a companion type product. This is not trying to be G.I. Joe. This is not the same thing, but it goes along just fine and it'll fit with the collection you've already got.
I can't wait for your guys' stuff to land. Obviously, you know, I'm talking to guys that know O-ring. The original 80s stuff is every day is getting more and more and more brittle. And I can't drop the money to grab these O-ring figures that I'm afraid to touch. So like I'm excited to get that architecture in something new and a new idea. I'll just get this, you know, the boring comparisons out of the way. But with Hasbro, you know, reissuing, they're changing the internals and they're, you know, changing the plastics and the hands and stuff. And all that's great. But can we let the brand grow a little bit? give us that two-pack of Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, I guess, but the second release, like, give us something new. Give it just a new take on anything. You know, keep the construction because people want it, but, like, just give us a new idea, please.
I was not there for the very beginning of Real American Hero. I was born in 83, so I came into it about mid-run into those neon years, which a lot of people don't like, but that was kind of 92 and 93 were my jam. That was, I was at just the right age for that. But, you know, one of the things I really liked about G.I. Joe is that every year there were all these new characters. It was a constantly growing kind of roster, right? And I understand from Hasbro's point of view, where they're protecting intellectual property now and they're, you know, trying to make sure they've got their trademarks covered on those characters and things. They got to make sure they do Snake Eyes every year. They got to make sure they do Roadblock every year. And I get that. But also, like you said, for somebody that's pretty much a completist on these things, how many more of that same tooling or that same design do I need? And that was something that was fun for us, was we got to start completely new with new characters and a new mythos and telling a whole different kind of story, just to be able to say, okay, well, we're going to do, you know, X number of new guys. That was exciting.
He's talking about how you can't buy Yo-Ring because they're getting more brittle every year, and I'm giving Alexander a Ninja Viper for his birthday this year. So
good birthday.
This is the variance in our partnership, right? I'm assuming that both of you finished your O-ring line years and years ago. Are both of you guys big modern collectors?
Some. They're really big, but then when we started this thing, I backed out and started focusing more on things that happened when I was a kid. Like, you know, the stuff behind me, you know, I remember that stuff, you know, the Intruder and the Avenger spaceships, you know, with the noise, and when Battlestar Galactica came out and all the different figures that you could buy everywhere. I mean, when I was a kid, I just loved Half Price Store. Like, that was my jam. You know, all the Sergeant Rock figures you ever wanted. Yeah, so I think mine kind of switched. I love the modern stuff, and I love the modern takes, especially the Pursuit of Cobra line. I thought that was just brilliant. And now I probably have, I don't know, maybe 100 modern figures, and a pretty good chunk of those are customs that Mikey made. Because he just made characters that they didn't have, and he did a Mercer that is probably my all-time favorite figure that he did.
Well, you have Mikey working for you guys now, right? He's painting. I mean, that's kind of the dream from a dad perspective, isn't it?
Super, super huge. I kind of had a bad couple of years here personally, and when we got home, I don't know, I felt like extra emotional that day. And I was telling him, like, I don't know if I said this, but, you know, being able to go up there and having you stand behind, you know, the table with us as the artist, you know, as the one that painted that figure was like one of the biggest moments. You know, I got all emotional. I think he thought I was losing my mind, but yeah, it was really emotional. And on the way home from that trip, it hit me, you know, like that is one of the coolest things to be able to say that. When he was a kid, you know, he was a fan because I was a fan, and we played, you know, we played for hours with G.I. Joes. And, you know, as he's gotten older, he kind of got into the modern stuff a couple of years ago when I took him to the last Joe Con, and I came back and showed him a John Wick figure. And he's like, well, that's kind of cool. I'll go get that Marauder had. And I come back to the hotel and I noticed that there's a bag of modern figures. And then when we got home back to Springfield, he lives in Kansas City, so he was going to go home that day. And I had told him this guy on Facebook had a bunch of Pursuit of Cobra stuff. And he sent me a picture. I was at work, and he sent me a picture. And he said, I couldn't take it. I had to check it out. And he had like a seat full of modern stuff that he had bought. So it bit him pretty hard. And then he started customizing. And
so he was into it as a kid. He had a dark period, and now he's back.
Yeah, brought him back to the light a little bit.
You've seen me running around with A. He has such a long leash that you guys spent more time with him at Joe Fest this year than I did. So, Joel, you didn't see this, but I sent both these guys and like Ben and Sean and a few others these long 7-volume book messages after Joe Fest that just said, A, spent more time with you than me. I appreciate the love and kindness you showed to this kid. You guys really brought him in and made him feel like he was part of the team. And that's all he talked about, right? This has actually been the show that he has asked for the least amount of things, spent the least amount of money, and yet talked the most about the show.
That's pretty cool.
And a lot of that was helping Josh with the comic book stuff and then being behind. It was like 4 or 5 of you guys are all in a row, and he just hung out behind the crew.
Yeah, he did. He just kind of went back and forth between Ben and us and Paul.
And I know at one point he was behind Jason's table playing with somebody's Warhammer action figures.
Oh, yeah, George's stuff. Yeah, he got really into that.
And I don't know George that well. I met him last year and then this year. And I'm like, hey, man, he doesn't have to touch your things. And he's like, hey, he's good. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have a real neat team. Troy, I think everybody kind of knows part of your story because you've worked for a couple different big companies.
I've worked on big brands, Joe and Star Wars and Transformers and stuff. You know, I designed a couple of convention sets. I've done a lot of work for Marauder. I do the packaging stuff on Action Force. I've worked on Dime Novel Legends. I've worked on bin stuff for RoboSkull. I'm kind of a fill-in guy wherever anybody needs me at the moment. So
I first came across your name, or I guess presence, when you and Russell from Dime Novel would always put up, I don't know if they were Photoshop or however they were put up, but your mock-ups of essentially maybe ideas the club could have used. I think I must have found it through like a link on His Tank, but I had come across one of your old blogs or websites or whatever, your concept for like the Eco Warrior stuff. I remember I used to spend my coffee breaks and lunch breaks just sifting through and looking at your different design builds. I'm really big into, I love looking at figures in the parts breakdown. I love like a good Franken figure or a good repaint. And not necessarily just like, okay, it's the same character with a new paint job, but like if you look at Dime Novel, which I know you guys both know him, you really have to hold the figures in hand sometimes to be like, oh, these are the same legs. You know, obviously as a customizer, he puts so much care and attention into his paint apps and his details. And that's like, I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing within your guys' stuff in hand where I can start to piece, you know, like, oh, this is this guy's arms or this legs. And like, that's, I love that when like a good creative team, you know, puts that work in. To me, that's obviously always a sign of like great design work where you can reuse a lot of stuff, but in a creative way where it's still as impressive as the first figure you picked up.
It's been interesting because, you know, I've worked on a lot of modern stuff that you can do that with, right? Especially like when you're using secondaries. And like you said, there's a number of lines out there. Dime Novel Legends is one of them. They've been very creative on reusing bodies. And you can. I mean, if you do the paint breaks different and it's a different enough deco, you don't notice right away. And that's great. What we found kind of difficult as we were going into this project was that O-ring figures don't have secondaries typically. So we had to get real creative about how we were going to reuse things and where and what we were going to do with them, because we kind of, based on our format, limited our options even more. And if we needed new parts, it meant we were going to have to tool, you know, a lot of new pieces. So it was an interesting thought experiment. We played with a lot of stuff.
You guys have also talked about some of your reusage in your panels before the launch of the Kickstarter. You guys are pretty transparent about, like, we have to do this to make the money so that we can tool the new things. John, I mean, you've probably talked about this on other shows at this point, but I don't know if everybody's as familiar with your story. I know when I met you, it was through Rage and Spoon and what you were doing with him, and then you and Mikey hanging out. Where do you come from?
I don't know. As a kid, I wanted to be a designer. I took a path to do that, automotive design, and then life just kind of took me in a different direction. And so I ended up working for Bass Pro for one of their factories. That was 1989. I've worked there ever since. I started out as a boat builder, and I had some drafting skills. I took some AutoCAD classes and then ended up in engineering and then R&D and then became the engineering manager of that plant after about 15 years, and then left the company, came back as a project manager for R&D. I had spent a lot of those years going to every time we opened a new plant, going and setting up our system. So I did that. So I have like a huge part number and understanding of how parts lists work and all of that. Quite a bit of mechanical knowledge from building. I spent about a year building kit cars professionally. So
wow.
Had a few things in there. And throughout, there were three times when I had worked with people to start a toy line, and each one of them crashed and burned miserably.
It's not an easy proposition.
There were two 12-inch lines and a different 4-inch line.
Oh, wow.
So I wanted to do something, and Paul kind of gave me a chance with Raging Spoon to flex my muscle for modeling, for 3D modeling. I don't know. I took that spaceship to JoeCon that last year. And, you know, when the designer of it like brings you up in the panel and tells people like, you want to know what that was going to look like? Somebody made a model of it and brought it. And I did that from like four drawings or four pictures that someone had taken of different views of it. And I used those four pictures and turned that into a full 3D model. And really the only thing I got wrong was the size. Mine was just way too big. I mean, that kind of got me. People realized that I could do modeling from there. Just Troy wanted somebody to do some work for them. And so set Paul on me to be a guinea pig, and I did all right. So, I mean, Paul and I are still working on stuff now. I mean, that's a partnership that's probably never going to go away. He's a good friend. And like I say, he gave me my first shot.
Not this year, but last year, you guys had some moving doors and some prototypes, and you guys were messing around and like called me over and let me play with them. And I was like, oh, okay, sure, I'll do that. You've had a lot of near misses, and the right partnership, especially in an industry as hard as toys, means everything.
Exactly. It really does. You know, somebody's got to know what they're doing.
Is that you, Troy? Do you know what you're doing?
No. When we figure out who knows what they're doing, we'll be set.
I know this is a ways off. Not this year, but the year before, I was able, lucky enough to catch your guys' panel, and you were showing, you know, your dreams and admirations and when the adventure-focused vehicles and stuff. And after that, I immediately came and found you on the floor so I could be like, hey, man. Like, let's get this going. Like, we desperately need these planes and these vehicles that never made it. And then you and I spent a long time talking kind of about all those weird, like, camping brands that show up in, like, the Bass Pro Shops or the outdoor stores and how cool they really are. And then it's hard to get them before they're gone because they don't have a permanent shelf space, at least in my area. And those ones I've found,
I can
at least,
hook you up, Joel.
Hell yes. The Walmart ones I kind of avoid because they're a little bit too just low quality. But those sets I always love when they, like, you know, the stuff we never get, like chairs, tables, mugs, coolers, tents, the stuff that just builds out like this great world. I really became kind of obsessed with the adventure idea after like the club's throwback to the adventure team stuff. Really obsessively building like modern adventure team guys, kitting them out and trying to find vehicles in the wild. And luckily there are some really cool stuff, but some of those more independent brands like Bruder and Schlike, they're really expensive. And like the Bruder stuff is hard because it is 116, so it is slightly bigger. So on some of the vehicles I have to use like a roadblock or a big bulky guy in the driver's seat. Otherwise it looks like a little kid sitting up and trying to reach the steering wheel.
At this point, though, since they're working on 3 3/4, your guys are going to look too big. You're going to have to get more into O-ring. This is your gateway to O-ring.
I've said it before when, and Carson's doing it as well, but when you bring in an idea that is new, I'm way excited for Call Sign Longbow because it's fresh. You know, obviously everybody's going crazy over the Ninja. I mean, it's awesome. It's straight off of like a 80s C movie where it's like, we got to have a ninja, but also we have to fight Russia. But also like the tracksuit guy is really, truly is timeless because that look is still relevant today. But it's, you know, I'm so in. I mean, I went all in. I have not opened the backer kit yet because I'm like still recovering from the his tank and the Operation Recall payments. What I'll generally do is I'll probably open up the backer kit this weekend, get a rough idea of how much overtime I need to work to pay for the cart I want to build, and then I'll close it off for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then I finally am like, all right, I got to just do it and get it over with.
RoboSkull hit like they hit like a freight train, but it's hard to argue a human-sized skull that can fly, and he put three different scales into it, which I love, you know, 6, 4, and 3 3/4. With your guys' 3 3/4, I threw it up on Facebook multiple times of how many of the 3 3/4 RoboSkull I was ordering. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm getting the 6-inch, I'm getting the 4-inch, but I'm going hard because there's two heads. I needed 5 of each. I like O-ring. I don't mind army building. I like you guys. I like Ben. And I like the concept. I like the idea. I loved the character. So being able to see it at Joe Fest this year was great. And then you guys kick off. When the dust settled, you guys had what? 811 backers. You were about $207,000. You've launched the backer kit. You now have a pre-order you've launched. And I know you guys are pushing forward pretty hard. I know the backer kit is going to those 811 of us that were already all in. I was double all in, which is why I filled out my backer kit and I sent it over to Joel and Greg and Jaren. And I really like the idea of the weapon refresh. It's a beautiful idea. I think I need 5 or 10 of those because, of course, I do.
The thing is, like in the Vintage Joe line, I loved the accessory packs.
Same.
I get everybody, you know, has that consternation when they go to buy a figure someplace and somebody's put the accessory pack weapons with them and it's not correct. And I get it. But I loved those accessory packs when I was a kid, even the weird like neon blue colored ones, because those were the ones I had. I had the one in 86 and the one in 87. And, you know, they made no sense at all, but I loved them and I loved having them. So, yeah, we always knew we wanted to do accessory kits, but we also knew that wasn't going to work good in the Kickstarter. Like, we wanted to keep the Kickstarter itself just to figures for simplification. And we always knew, like, okay, you know, we want to add a couple of things in backer kit. That just made sense in the backer kit because it's a cheaper price point. And we didn't want people, like, getting confused with, like, the, you know, those package levels where they could pick stuff. Why couldn't they get that? Or, you know, if they got that, it wasn't worth as much. It was more of a hassle. So we knew we wanted to do that. And the backer kit was a good opportunity for us to add that in and give some additional value that way.
And that, is that showing up in the pre-order kit as well, I'm assuming?
Yep.
Perfect. The Ninja is amazing. As Joel said, it's very, it's beautiful. And the weapons, the hammer and sickle is just, that's really well done. I go through and I choose my two ninjas and I jump in and I'm like, all right, now is where I go and I do all my army builders. And then I scroll down to see, you know, what's next. And I knew you guys had a comic book. There's the exclusive cover and then there's the regular cover, which, you know, I expected, but I didn't expect the extra patches and the weapon kit. With your guys' backer kit and with the pre-order, how long are you guys leaving that open for? What's the expectation?
We're going to leave that open until November 15th. That's our close date. And we picked that because we knew we wanted it to run for a couple of months. So as soon as the Kickstarter ended, I had people emailing me who said, oh my God, I just found this. I missed it. How do I get in on it? Which at that point, it's too late for the Kickstarter. So we want to leave it open for a while to make sure that anybody who missed out on the Kickstarter gets their opportunity. Now, those people that got in on the Kickstarter, they're still getting the best deal, right? Those bigger packages, they get the best deal of anybody. And folks now are still going to get a good deal because we're still doing $25 a figure. So we will run those until November 15th. Everybody has their opportunity to get in and still get in at a deal. We're going to close that then on November 15th, like I said, and we want to do that so that is out of the way before we get to the holiday season, because we know once we get into Thanksgiving territory, folks have other things they need to be spending their money on, right? So we didn't want to run it. We didn't want to run it for too long, have it run into the holiday season and put anybody in a tight spot. So we wanted to end it before then. So we'll close it off. In 2023, we will likely reopen the backer kit. But when we reopen it, all the exclusives are going to be gone and everything's going to be at full price.
What does full price look like?
So full price on the figures, I believe we've got, they're $25.99 instead of $25 a piece.
Okay.
Except for Ghost, because he's a deluxe figure, he'll cost more.
Sure.
So that the prices on all of those will go up when we reopen. So, but we, like I said, we wanted to make sure everybody that wanted to get on it had an opportunity to get on it, even a little longer than we could realistically run the Kickstarter for.
If somebody showed up with a printed out piece of paper signed by John that said, Merry Christmas, I bought a bunch of stuff you're going to get in 2024, I wouldn't be mad at him. But it would have to have John's like personal signature on there. The all-ins and the backer kit deals are always the best way to go. Being able to run that through the backer kit and the pre-order system in tandem with the backer kit is really kind of special because that's not something that really happened a couple years ago. Like it or not, our community's growing every day. I mean, who the hell would have thought 26,000 people on a his tank?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, our Facebook groups aren't even 26,000 people. I was watching you guys navigate the tracksuit thugs during Hawkeye. Personally, like when you showed that off last year at Joe Fest, what captivated me more than the tracksuit itself was the Molotov cocktail that you guys were doing. You're showing the hand cut out in there. And I loved that, just that simplicity of intention around everything you're doing. That, sure, it's the modern era. Your thumbs aren't going to break like they did in 84, or I guess in 86, which would be a much more appropriate year to use. But even still, you're making these things very grippable for General Hawk as well as your own figures. I've been very excited to put Uptown with my Rock and Roll and my Roadblock, since he's the other heavy. So now I can throw Uptown in there. I'm really excited. I mean, I've told you guys all this in person at shows, but it really excites me to see, honestly, just more independent toy companies coming up and doing fun and interesting things that are energizing the community, but also to bring back O-Ring. You guys are starting this wave, and I'm loving it. Where am I going with this, Joel? I just want to talk about this. I just want to talk about like the intentionality around sticking to not just the year 86. Like, that's great because you have the Soviets as an enemy, because no one's going to be mad at you for using a country that doesn't exist.
That's the plan.
But the intentionality of making it look and feel and fit on the shelf with your G.I. Joes.
This is the line that's got me excited at the concept of buying O-Ring figures when I like swore them off. I'm like real fired up about collecting O-rings specifically in the call sign arena.
I guess I'm an addict because the whole thing is chasing. I remember when I was a kid and I would walk into the store, right? And this was pre-internet. Nobody had any idea what was coming on. There was no such thing as toy news. And when you would walk into the store, just all of a sudden one day, there were new figures, right? Things you had never seen before. And there was a whole case, and they came in a case of 32 back then. So there was like whole pegs full of these brand new characters you had never seen before. And I lived in a small town, so we didn't like get the comic on a regular basis or anything. So literally just one day I'd walk into a store and boom, new product line. And I remember that feeling as a kid and getting excited and the way that felt. As we have moved in to the modern era and, you know, everything gets announced online or a show ahead of time and you know everything that's coming. And I have always wanted to recapture that feeling of what it felt like to come in and find a new figure in a format that I'm familiar with, but all new characters. Oh, my God, you know, and not that we can really do that. We can't just surprise people with a whole line, but.
Well, you guys kind of did.
Well, kind of. But really, it's chasing that feeling, man. I want to feel that.
I mean, you guys kind of did with your Kickstarter, like. One day you just took your website down and made it steel web. And the next day we had a new character unlocked, or the adapt. So you have given that feel even in the modern era. Some of the stuff you were showing a couple of years ago, that definitely spans that 12 inch all the way to modern feel, even some futuristic stuff. I'm excited to see what comes next. I obviously want to ask, but I'm glad you guys are keeping some things close to the chest in terms of where you're going next.
We want to build Longbow as a successful brand, and we want Longbow to be self-sustaining over a long period of time, right? I want to...
Absolutely.
I love 80s Cold War military stuff. Like, that's my jam, and I want to keep doing this for a long time. But there's a lot of other brands that we'd like to develop if we have the time and money to do so, because that's our limitation in all things, right? There's a lot of other things I'd like to draw, too. And John has already started to draw lots of other things. So it's just a matter of how soon can we get to some of those other things.
And I know in that same panel 2 years ago, I had already met you, John, but I hadn't met you, Troy, at that time. And you stung me hard. We're sitting in the panel, and in the middle of the panel, Alexander stands up and is like, are these going to be for kids to play with? I don't know if you remember this. I remember quite well because it hurt.
I do remember this, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. You were like, I mean, I guess if you tell your dad to buy two sets. And I was like, Damn it. We're not even friends. What are you doing? But it was perfect. And he gave the whole like, yeah. And so he is all in on your stuff. And I know at Joe Fest, sitting behind your guys' table, every time I came over, he's trying to put things in the watchtower. He wants to put a guy on the trike. But he did. He had a lot of fun sitting behind your guys' table. He asked a lot of questions because you guys had a couple prototypes out. I think you had one of your figures exploded out so they could see the body parts. You had some weapons out. Kind of the same thing you had at AR. But although at AR, you also had a buck with you. And I don't remember if you had that at Joe Fest.
I don't know that we had the buck by itself. We had a couple of unpainted printed figures and a couple of painted ones, yeah.
I know you had the buck at AR because I was like, ooh, how do I get one of these? And you were like, you don't get one of these. These are ours.
You know, we showed those online and we had so many people, well, why aren't you going to sell these? It's like, because it's not really the product. That's a tool. Like, we're using that to get to the product.
We've all grown up with this stuff. And now we get to walk the halls with the people that were our childhood heroes. We just didn't know their names. And now we get to break bread with them and have beers with them. We've all shook hands and had conversation with Kirk and Ron and Mark. And so everybody's interested in it a little deeper than, I don't know, than other toy lines that I really mess around with. I don't see that level of, I have to know every single solitary detail. Can you list all 17 departments at Hasbro in 1982? And who worked in every department? Who was the mail runner that ran the packets from?
Carson's got that somewhere on his site, I'm sure of it.
Does. At some point, we are going to get creator profiles of the mail room. Either that or Dan has it.
He might have it too, yeah.
I'm making joke, but you know, we all love these two guys. And the fact that they're archiving everything is incredible. But because they're archiving everything, yeah, you have a ton of us older nerds going, I would put that buck on my shelf with all my other toys. You're like, it's not the toy. What does the community need to do to support you guys to get you to the point where we can start seeing things like small vehicles, small watchtowers, these play sets? Is that something that is like series 2, series 3, or is that something you need 2,000 people really driving this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we would need a larger group than what we've currently got. But I also think, right, it's steps, right? You have to build a foundation first, and nobody except for Ben gets to come in on his first one and have this huge base of people to draw from. He's the anomaly. You got to start somewhere. And I get there are people that will not kick in until there is product in hand. And I don't begrudge those folks at all, right? I get it. Some people need to see it to be real. And, you know, no harm, no foul there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we know that part of that in order to grow is on us, right? We got to make sure we deliver. We got to make sure we deliver quality product and that people are happy with it, right? And that is really how we grow out from there. I mean, when you look at Marauder, right? And I've known him since 2005, right? So I've known him almost 20 years. You know, he started out with a series of guns. Like, that was what he started with in 2005. I remember at that first JoeCon, I met him out in Minneapolis, and he just had a little table. And look at where he's grown to now. Same kind of thing. I mean, every one of his projects he does gets substantially bigger and bigger and bigger. Same kind of thing for us. We're a little ahead on that game, but we know that we need to deliver and execute for this thing to grow.
Well, sure.
Would we like to do that kind of stuff in series 2 or 3? Yeah. But you know, time will tell, and we want to be careful that we grow in line with what we can do. We don't want to get in too far over our heads anywhere, and have it hurt the long-term stability of the brand, because we want to keep going. So we got lots of characters we want to make.
Yeah. I mean, you guys showed off a bunch 2 years ago, more ideas under the same umbrella that a Longbow's under. Is that the right way of putting it?
There were some other brands. Sure. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
We'll just say there were some other brands.
The umbrella that is Grindstone. All of them are captivating to me.
When I first dove back into collecting G.I. Joe, you know, I lurked in the shadows. And I still, for the most part, kind of do outside of this show. You know, you bring up Marauder. I had found the original run of What's Not Joe Mine and was listening to that. And his name gets thrown out a lot. And I remember the Kickstarter for the first wave of Marauder figures, and I was not comfortable with putting any money out with that big of a window.
Yeah, it's a weird concept if you haven't done it before, right?
I knew that his weapons were amazing. So I remember when I finally made that order for the... I did a gray and a black figure, and I did, like, the pouches that were opposite, and I was going to make this, like... Now when I look back, I'm like, boy, what a lackluster design choice of my own design. No, I was driving the ship, but I remember, you know, I spent every one of my extra dollars that week, and their shipping is amazing. So it was like, I didn't have to stress that long before it came in. And I just remember like opening that little bubble pouch and just being like, damn, these actually feel better than the 50th figures by a long shot. But then when their next Kickstarter, I believe, was their World War II, I just immediately went all in. And now everything they do, I pretty much just throw as much money as I can. So I do think when your guys' stuff lands, I'm assuming that the RoboSkull kit is going to kind of hit first.
Yeah, the RoboSkull stuff should get there before us.
So I especially think when people get that, you know, that collaboration figure and it's in hand, I think there's going to be a massive upswing when they can finally touch it. You nailed it. That is like a huge thing. And especially if you're new to the community and, you know, I don't know the original What's on Joe Mind crew personally, but if those guys were able to vouch for this person and this person and this person, and you can kind of look in and say, well, if all these people are good people in our community and they stand with this person, then I can trust investing in this person's business. Yes, everybody has to prove what they're selling and prove what they're doing, but you at least are community people.
Not to get too philosophical about it, right? But it's like, there are so many moving parts to any of these product lines. And I always explain to people, we have all of this detail work that must be done. And it must be done on the other side of the planet in a language that you don't speak, right? And there are so many things that can get screwed up along the way. And then, like we saw, all of a sudden we have a pandemic now in the middle of things. And nobody knows how to plan around that on the production side, right? Like, hadn't had that happen in anybody's lifetimes. Nobody was prepared for that. And then there's still shockwaves from that, right? There's still issues that are being caused by that even today. It's difficult. It's more than difficult. But, you know, we feel like we've got good partners in place for that. And that's key. And that's for the successful projects, they have good production partners in place. And sometimes, you know, things change. You got to look at a different factory, whatever it might be. But if you have stand-up people, you know that they're going to come through, even if it takes longer, even if you have to move it to another factory, or even if you have to move it to a different country for production, whatever it might be. You know, people in the community are more likely to carry through, especially if it's people who've been around for a long time and like you said, kind of have a background and stuff. There's a lot of stress involved with it because no matter how many times you've done it or you know someone who's done it, who's helping you, there's always this uncertainty in your mind about where things are going to be. But, you know, it's just a matter of working through those things and whatever it is and keeping on it until you have product to deliver. But it is. It's just a matter of keeping on it and making sure that stuff gets done.
John, like you said, you know a lot of this sort of stuff as well. Troy, you've been in the toy industry for a while. So, you know, everybody shows up with hopes and dreams, but you guys have a few cheat codes of your own that I've backed over 230 or 250 Kickstarters in my day.
Wow.
What I've found is I don't back video games and movies anymore. I back toys and comic books. Toys specifically, you know, there was a point where all these different toy companies were showing up, failing their Kickstarter, resetting, succeeding their second. And it really feels like that they did that beginning groundswell and work. And now it's not as hard to pass your Kickstarter because the numbers are more set and people have seen a toy line come through Kickstarter and deliver enough. I encourage anybody that is unsure to go in light. How much is a vintage figure right now? If I'm paying $50 to $70 for a Shipwreck, which is insane, I can bet $100 on a toy line that is kickstarting or pre-ordering. If people are running out and dropping $1,000 on a Goldhead without the gun and the patch, you can put some money on Grindstone. You guys are well invested, and this is a thing that isn't a new concept. You guys aren't the first people to kickstart.
And that's one of the things, right? We've worked on other Kickstarter projects, not our own, but we've worked on projects for other people. So we do have some experience on that. We have tried to learn everything we can from folks. I've talked with Marauder John about it. We've talked with Ben about it at length. We obviously worked on their projects and tried to pick up every good idea and kind of safety protocol and things that we can from those guys. So we're not, like you said, kind of a cheat code. We're not quite at ground zero.
Absolutely.
We're a little more experienced than that. You know, when you think about it, it is a weird concept. You're going and you're putting in money and you're betting that in a year and a half or 2 years, whatever your time frame is, that you're going to get product in hand. And nowhere else would you typically do that in your everyday life, right? You don't do it at the grocery store. You don't do it anywhere else. It is a little weird until you've done it a couple of times and get a hang for it. And for I'll say on the flip side, right, for the entities that are doing these crowdfunding campaigns, right, it opens up a whole different realm and a whole different market for folks, right? We can make stuff that nobody else is going to make. If we went to the bank and asked for the money to do this, they'd tell us we were out of our minds and to get the hell out. For the entities that are running these Kickstarters, it also helps. We're selling direct to our customers now. You know, we're coming to you guys and we're asking you to put in to help make this dream possible. There is a gamble on the consumer end, but there's also a big gamble on production end. It's great instant market feedback, instant feedback on whether or not your market is responding to it. So it's a very, very different thing, but it also, especially for smaller collectible toy lines, makes a lot of sense once you've gotten through a few and you get comfortable with that format.
Kickstarter is notorious for the first 48 hours you're riding that high, and the last 48 hours, hold on to your ass, it's about to move. But you guys did a great job in the middle of keeping people engaged during the Kickstarter slump. I don't know what your guys' job share is in that, but like, who's putting all that together? Who's manning that? Because that is a full-time gig.
Yeah, it was. And we both worked on it to some extent. But a lot of the graphics and stuff I was throwing together. We had Ben helping out on that too. Ben and Mark, they were helping us out on that. And when you get to the middle and things slow down, that's a rough time. That's when you're on the back end watching it, you get really apprehensive and you start to worry about stuff. And
you start finding religions that you weren't a part of, losing religions you used to be a part of.
Yeah, exactly. Luckily, though, because we had worked with folks who were experienced, we were aware that that was coming. And they were there whenever we would freak out to tell us, no, you're fine. Don't worry about it. Just write it out. You're going to be good. It's always bad in the middle.
That's also where it helps that you guys have been on other teams that have gone through the process as well. You've seen it maybe not from the driver's seat, but you've at least seen it riding shotgun or backseat.
Exactly.
And also like some of the problems that have shown up in production delays and things moving around, whether or not to change manufacturers, all of those things you guys have seen personally through your work, either with big companies like Bass Pro or Hasbro, through working with friends on all these different things. It's really compelling to me, like when you start to get past like, oh, I really like this figure or that figure, you start getting into behind that. You guys are really a compelling duo.
I'm glad you think so.
John, you were talking about your 3D modeling stuff. I know, Troy, you do that as well, but where does that shift happen with you guys? Are you guys both taking a pass at the same thing, or are you guys taking different stuff?
Yeah, we're not usually taking a pass at the same thing. We don't have time for that usually. So usually we're divvying that up, trying to decide who wants to work on what at a particular time. And
yeah, sometimes it'll be just whatever the project is. You know, it'll be something that maybe Troy says, I really think we ought to do this, or I want to try this. And so Troy will take the lead on it. And he'll go through something and he'll say, this is what I think. And then there are other things where I'll say like, oh, I can knock that out pretty quick in 3D. And then I just go do that. On that part of it, we do pretty good. We're both perfectionists, I believe. And during the Kickstarter, I know we butted heads a few times because one of us had this vision and one of us had this vision. But it works because we both know that at the end of the day, you know, Troy was talking a while ago about the philosophical side of giving your money to somebody. And for us, it's deeply personal. Like, this is our life dream, and we will do everything we can to make it happen. We don't even, I don't think, joke about failing even. We joke about, we won't have enough money for this, but we never joke about, it's not going to happen.
Sure.
Because now we're all in, you know, and we've got everybody else all in. We feel like both of us, I think, like I said, we're perfectionists. We both knew from the beginning when we started this, we would see it all the way through. But sometimes we get into that, but at the end of the day, we both like kind of know where we're comfortable, and we work those things out. And during the Kickstarter, like I said, we were butting heads, but at the same time, we were in full collaboration mode. And it would be all through the day, sometimes till 2 a.m. We would be talking to Ben till 2 a.m, talking about what are we going to do next? What are we going to come up with next? And meanwhile, both of us are on these calls and we're talking and we're drawing up like what we think we should do next. And it worked out. You know, we came up with some pretty cool ideas for the movie posters. And
those were amazing.
Random things to throw out there to fill the time and fill the days out, you know. And I remember there were, you know, naysayers that were like, I don't want a patch. I want a figure. What are we going to get? It's coming, man. We still got a month to fill out here. What are you worried about? Well, it's going backwards. I don't know what your plan is. Maybe we don't know either, but by the end of the day, we're going to figure it out because we're not going backwards. It's just funny the way we work together on things like that. And I don't know that anybody ever would have paired us up 10 years ago and thought that would be those would be the two guys that would make this happen. But
it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of it. I think we've done a great job, and
absolutely
looking forward to the next few waves and what we're going to bring you guys, because there's some, man, we got some cool stuff coming.
The thing that I've loved the most about kind of the last few years, where, you know, social media has kind of evolved even to another level, where not only do we get to see the people making the stuff that we want, we get to be a part of it in a way that you couldn't ever do before. And then also you get to see you two, and specifically making your project, is because you're making the stuff you want to buy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's like, and that's the beauty of it. It's like a joke, but at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, of course this stuff is delivering concept wise top tier. That has been such a treat. You know, again, like I keep bringing up, you know, Troy's blog or whatever, but it's like, no, that was an awesome thing to stumble into.
I'm just so glad somebody read that, because I was not sure anybody had ever actually looked.
This is the whole reason we wanted to bring you guys on, actually. It had nothing to do with Grindstone. It was all about your blog from 20 years ago.
I remember when I started seeing your name pop up with the Marauder stuff, I immediately was like, this is awesome. I was like, this is great. Like, and that was when I really started to kind of realize how deep, you know, the G.I. Joe community actually was, and how interwove everything was. And it, again, putting a face to it just makes all of this experience so much better. And it's like, I get to feel like I'm a part, and it adds so much more joy to it. I'm using this word lightly, but investing in to succeed and deliver and grow. I just can't wait to see what's the next step for you guys. I mean, I know we have to deliver on wave one first, but.
Well, it's that emotional investment, right? It's not, yes. It's not so much the financial piece, like as a business, right? Because we got to pay for stuff. We got to have money. So there's got to be money coming in, but it gives us the opportunity to make that emotional connection with folks and for them to invest in the brand. I can't imagine any way to get something like this off the ground without having some kind of mechanism to bring people in like that, right? Like, because, I mean, you know, it's not like we have a cartoon that we can show you. We do have a comic, which is great. But again, we got to get people to come read it. And that crowdfunding and getting people in on the ground floor, and especially in a community where you can meet people, that helps make that connection. And that's really important, you know, for long-term success and just to get stuff up and going. And like you said, we just want to make the stuff we want, and we know other people want it too. So let's all benefit. Let's all, you know, let's all get the stuff we want.
At least 811 of us wanted it in a 30-day time span. And as we mentioned, like from when you opened your backer kit and then your pre-order to today, that number is moving. Ben is a champ. He is obviously in the same group that you guys are in, where if we all work together, we all succeed. You know, I'm assuming, John, are you still working on Complex and other projects? or have you had to take a step back and just work on this?
I work on this mostly, but I still work. I've got a few things going with Paul, a couple of tie-in things that he's doing. And anytime he needs 3D work done for the modeling side, for the drafting side, for the complex stuff, I'm all in on that. And there's stuff he's got planned. There's so much. I mean, he's got a lot going on that he's trying to bring out. So, yeah, there's always a little bit. I try to keep a little bit of room. But when something we need to do something for a longbow, that always becomes the priority.
Well, and I asked because, Troy, you had started this by saying you still do all these other things for all these other companies, as well as now you are your own man. This isn't a quit your job proposition yet. This is day one. So you guys are holding down a 40. You got your side projects, and then you have a second 40. You both have family, and this is as intimate as any marriage could be because you guys are making house-sized financial decisions together. It's wild to think that we're still like a couple of years out from having these in hand, but it's already this much of the community is rushing to line up behind you guys. And when you talk about some people are worried about giving their money into something that they're not going to get for a couple of years, I really implore people to like set that aside and just look at the landscape. It's incredible. I do want to talk to you guys about the comic book, though. I'm a comic book guy. You know, you guys are doing a comic book, and a comic book is not cheap. And I know you guys, you can get around that a little bit with digital, but you guys are sending out paper copies. So there's printing. What's going on with the comic? Like, why invest in a loss leader?
We do have stories that we want to tell. There are some great figures in there, but we want to tell stories about the characters. And we want to grow out that mythos. And we were very fortunate that we got hooked up with an independent publisher who could provide that piece of it, right? Because we do not make comic books, and we could make one or the other, but we, you know, we're really more toy guys. So we were lucky to get hooked up with the guys from Broken Icon. They've been great to work with, and they can help us with all of those pieces. And that's the thing. We were really into partnering with people. We partnered with Broken Icon on the comic. We partnered with Ben on things. We partnered with Marauder. Even we had that the Retro Ops figure in the line.
Which is a very cool figure, by the way.
It's always better when you can work with people, and it's always better when you can work with your friends. And the comic was definitely an instance of this is not our wheelhouse. So we need somebody else that can come on who has experience and take that piece on for us and make sure that we're successful. They've been good to work with. And the comic has been real popular. I've had people ask about the comic at shows. The Broken Icon guys have had people asking about it at comic shows that they're going to. It's really kind of taken off. You know, we knew we couldn't afford animation or live action movies or something, but comic books just seem to be the right format to get our story out there.
It's what drove G.I. Joe for years, and that's kind of all of our, like, I can see behind both of you, it's not your only love, but it's one of our mains. I'm a huge comic book advocate. I just understand the cost of them, and I like the art. I like the story. Are you guys writing it, or do you have a writer that are taking your ideas?
The way that it worked on this first issue was we had a plot, and we had a pretty good idea of the story we wanted to tell. And then Nick is the writer and the creative director over there at Broken Icon. He helped us with the writing it in a comic book format and then cutting it down to 22 pages and getting it to a point where it was usable. But yeah, we've got a good working relationship with them, and it's kind of collaborative, which is great.
But it also means that that's not 100% off your plate then.
No, but it's mostly off our plate, so that's nice.
I think it's too close to us to let somebody else completely just run with it. I think we're still real protective of this IP. I mean, this is our baby, and you know, we like any help we can get, but I don't think either one of us are ready to just tell somebody else, like, you just do what you think. We really do have a plan and where we want to go with this story. And
is Nick also doing your guys' file cards, or are you guys managing that?
We're managing that. So we actually have a brand Bible that we've put together with character profiles and things, because we've been working on this for years. The first Joe Fest that we actually showed stuff at was back in 2019. So this thing has been cooking in the oven a long time. We've got much larger files on all the characters than will fit on a file card. So it's just a matter of paring stuff down to get it to fit on a bio card. But yeah, we've got an idea of who we want those characters to be and their backstories.
I'm a huge comic book advocate. You guys in the backer kit, at least for now, I don't know if the pre-order has it, but I certainly know the backer kit has it. You have the Kickstarter exclusive cover. You have a regular cover. I'm down for both. You guys have the patches. I love them. I have some Steel Brigade patches that came out of the community that I put with my Steel Brigade stuff. A has had his mom sew Steel Brigade and Longbow patches to a couple t-shirts. So I'm down for the patches. I don't see why anybody would ever complain about extra shit that you don't have to buy.
No. Well, the thing is, we knew, you know, we wanted some branded items, you know, but all right, t-shirts are a mess because people need different sizes and it's, you know, it's hard to fulfill. Hats are great, but sometimes people are picky about hats. The patches, those are some affordable, right? And that's the kind of thing where if we had to, we could pay out of pocket to get the patches around, you know, and not cut into the toy money. So it was an affordable thing. It's cool. The people who want to use it on stuff can use it on stuff. And if you don't like it, you don't have to buy that. So that, you know, that gave us a little bit of flexibility. But really, you know, in a Kickstarter, you need some smaller items, right? Because you need things that are different than you would find in retail, right? Like even if we find, you know, retailers to pick up the figures, they're not picking up the patches. That's a unique, smaller format kind of thing.
And I like that kind of stuff. I think that kind of stuff, it's that whole Harley Davidson thing of a customer's not a fan until they tattoo my brand on their body. It's in that same vein where it allows your fans to put a patch on their shirt or put a sticker on their laptop or a pin on their jacket. They can walk around and support you visually. You know, oh shit, that's a cool design. What's that from? I'm glad you asked. I think those things are, I find them fun, but I think they're hugely important. So I like those kind of things. I always pick up those little pieces of paraphernalia. Joel was talking about how he came to you as a duo by your blog and reading your words and seeing your customs and really getting to understand the way you were approaching his favorite brand. Whereas I kind of came the opposite. I met John first and Mikey, and I had this great conversation, not just about toys, but about my kids running around. His kid is standing with him. You know, and then I didn't get to meet you really, and I don't think we truly really met until AR, but I didn't get to meet you until that same weekend at like 3 a.m. where my kid is asleep in a chair and he's falling half out of the chair. Brian Kaufman and Aaron Dietrich are taking bets on how long until he falls.
That sounds like those guys.
Todd and I come over and we plop down and we're sitting there talking. Raging Spoon comes over and starts talking to me. You walk over and plop down between a few guys. And I'd never met you before then. We're all a little half-cocked. It's way too late in the evening or way too early in the morning.
It sounds like a Joe show, yeah.
This is also why I hugely advocate people coming to shows. Of course, with AR, we get that extra little step in there, you know. So I've really enjoyed getting to know you both over the last few years. I love seeing your stuff. I do appreciate the time you guys have provided us, really just for the two of us to gush all over you guys about how much we love what you're doing. You know, anybody I can advocate you guys to, I'm going to. And when you guys relaunch your pre-order next year, we're going to do the same.
Covered a lot of stuff, especially about kind of crowdfunding in general, which is nice. It helps to be able to explain to people how it works. Because like we said, it is kind of weird. But it is, especially for collectible lines, I truly believe it is the future, right? Because even Hasbro's running.
So is Mattel. So is Tomy now.
It's a matter of selling to a select group of people and giving them exactly what they want and letting them prove how much they want it. The Hiss Tank is a great example of that. That thing went off gangbusters because it was what that fan base wanted. You know, they put it out there and people put their money where their mouth was. And, you know, it's a great thing, like I said, for us to have that feedback. We know when things work. We know when things don't work.
Like, yes, you guys are asking the community for money, but your own investment into this is is larger than anyone, any one of us investing in you guys. Do you guys even have the funds to still collect toys at the moment? Or you had to pause? Are you in on the Hiss Tank? Are you in on Recall? Are you in on, you know, Marauders?
I am still in on some things. I am more likely to be in on those things that my friends have worked on, right? So Recall and Marauder and anything that Ben's got. But am I buying Joe at the rate I was buying Joe 2 or 3 years ago? No, I am not. I am not buying anything at the rate I was buying 2 or 3 years ago. That's something else that lots of people don't always take into consideration. And this is true of any crowdfunding campaign. The creators have already put in a ton of money, whatever it is. I mean, not just money, but time as well. But the creators have already invested huge amounts and have a lot riding on these things. You know, it's not just that we're out, put everything we can to get as far as we could get. Now that's where you're stepping out there. And I know that's true for everybody, like, you know, regardless of the kind of project. I know that's true for the board game people and the comic folks and all of them. They, you know, there isn't a creator out there that doesn't get to this point that hasn't, you know, put blood, sweat and tears into the project. And that's the thing, right? You know, that's their dream. And that's, you know, that's the basis to start it.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
And what happens in the Kickstarter is what made it past, as John, you said, two perfectionists, like running at each other full speed, and whatever lives through that is what was meant to live through that.
We appreciate it, and we appreciate all the support. It's incredibly rewarding to have people respond well to the characters and the figures. Because up until very recently, this just lived in our heads, and John and I were the only two that knew these characters.
This has been the Order of Battle.